This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks. 97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, I'm just getting used to this cold weather and, you know, just going with it.
I know it. We had the big blizzard of 2020 on Wednesday. Then we had the fallout ice storm on Thursday. And then yesterday we were warming up. And now this weekend we're going to be like 65, 70, lots of sunshine. So it's going to be a brilliant weekend.
See, I don't understand it. Nobody knows how to dress.
No.
One day you've got to have a hood and gloves on and everything. You know, we're at the North Pole. And then by Saturday, it's like, oh, well, we don't even need a coat.
Yeah, yeah. Wednesday, some of us were digging out of 8 inches of snow, and now we're all walking around in shorts and flip-flops.
That's right. And one day, Claudia couldn't even get to the office. It was so bad.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was so bad. The black ice and snow, you know, when you get 9 and 10 inches of snow, it's pretty bad. And then the next day, she went in late, and the door had so much snow on it, she couldn't hardly even get in the door.
I'm sure. And that was that big, heavy, wet snow. So you can't just, like, blow it around. I mean, it's really heavy. It's tough to move.
That's exactly right. And we hadn't had a snow in a couple of years. I was in shock.
Yeah. Yeah, they said it was but going into, I think it was Tuesday night, I think, they were saying that it was the biggest potential for accumulating snow for the first time since 2015. And I remember that 2015 storm. That was a big one, too.
I remember all the ice in it. I remember the snow and the ice. We had a lot of ice on that one, too.
Yeah, yeah, that was a bad one.
And they kept saying, you know, we may close the schools, but they didn't here. They talked about it, and they said, oh, no, you know, the temperature's up enough. Everybody's got to go to school. I go, oh, my gosh, I think it's a snow day, and they shouldn't go.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes these teachers and everything don't realize when it's, you know, that morning it was 25 degrees.
Mm-hmm. That's dangerous. That's a hard freeze. That makes for real dangerous stuff. You know, even if they plow like the main roads or they put the brine down and they get the main roads taken care of, you still have all those side roads. And then it sometimes takes a couple of days because anything that, you know, any ice that's in like shadows or like if there's an alley or a road that goes by a big building and it doesn't get direct sunlight, it can take a couple of days for that to melt. So it can still be dangerous.
That's right. And if people don't notice all that, you know, they can slide on down the road. That's not good.
Yeah. Well, hopefully now we're done with this for 5 more years.
I'll go for 5. You know, that's a good deal because I don't like this much snow and ice.
No.
And the snow was coming down very slowly here.
Yeah.
So, you know, it didn't accumulate a lot. Well, boy, it was just darn cold.
Could you imagine like 6 months of this kind of weather? Man.
I don't know how people in the north, Minnesota is the one I always think about. You know, how do their cows, their animals survive it? And nobody's ever told me if they have, you know, barns like we do here,
yeah.
You know, that they can actually go to. And I always hear all these bad stories about Minnesota and North Dakota. And I would hate to live in those states.
I don't think I know anybody up there. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody. I don't know.
A lot of the insurance companies, they're in Minnesota and Iowa.
Hmm.
And that's where they have their headquarters for some reason. Iowa has a lot of them. There's one street that has all these life companies. Minnesota has Allianz Life.
Yeah.
And, you know, lots of times they just don't open when it gets really bad.
Yeah. Of course, then they do have a lot of equipment, snow plows and whatever else you need to take care of it, I guess, when it happens, because, you know, we just don't. It happens so few.
But the individuals don't have any snow plows. I mean, you know, you've got to get to the highway. You've got to get down it. And I saw on television all those wrecks and all the blowing snow they couldn't get through. So that wasn't encouraging.
It was not encouraging. It makes us glad to be here and only deal with this for 2 days once every 4.5 years.
That's right. 2 days we were through. We're through with it now, and it's in the rearview mirror.
Yeah. If we could only have had that, say, maybe Christmas Eve, that would have been really nice.
It would have been. Everybody was hoping for some snow, which we did not get.
Yeah. Yeah.
So life is interesting.
Yeah, it
well,
is.
We better give out the phone number. We better get busy.
Well, let's do it. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
So, and don't forget, your website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. People can go there. They can see case studies. They can see exactly what investors have been making. They can find testimonials, all kinds of wonderful information. So as people start to plan for retirement, you know, we're getting well into the new year now. You know, we're into February. The holidays are long behind us. The January, I'm just trying to get back up to speed. Mode is gone. So now that we're back into the swing of things, what should people be thinking about as far as their wealth management goes? Is there anything that they should do at this time of year?
Well, I think everybody should say, okay, do we want it all in the stock market where we've got, you know, this risk, or do we want some of it conservative? And, you know, it's up to them. But I think you should have some of both. You should have some in the stock market if you're young enough, and then the rest, you know, conservative. Now, if you're getting ready to retire, you should have it all conservative, where you've got all this income coming in. Because if you've got stocks in this, unless it's you're getting dividends off of them, you just got the up and down. It may be up, but you have to sell the stock to get your money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not giving you an income every month. And this gives people income. I had a client this week that came in. He said it's our annual review, so we reviewed everything. And he's making about $100,000 a year with us, and that's enough for him to live on. You know, he doesn't need to take anything out of anything else. He's got about $100,000 in maturities every year in profit.
Wait a minute. You've got, and I'm sure you probably have others, but you've got this guy who is earning $100,000 a year just by investing in life insurance policies.
Yes, uh-huh. He has got over $1 million with us. I don't remember how much he started out with, but he said, I'm getting about $100,000 a year in interest from you, and that's all he needs, you know. So, and a lot of people are getting less, but you know, I know several people that are getting about $90,000 a year. So it's varying on our large customers. They're getting a lot of money to live on, and that gives them that income that they need, and the principal is always safe. So I think that's a pretty good deal.
Is there a difference in, because I know some people that try to, I guess, make a living off of Wall Street and that type of investment, do people find that this is much easier on their nerves? It's a much, because obviously it's not like a steady, quote, paycheck, like being at a job, but do they find that this is really a better option that maybe they hadn't thought of before?
Well, I think they do, because if they're older, you know, they're going to need a steady income. And we decide in advance, if they're going to retire this year, how much income are you going to need? And some of them say, Faye, I've got other money for right now. I won't need the income for 3 or 4 years. So we do it. And then some say, no, starting this next year, you know, I will need money.
Hmm.
So that's what we try to decide, is if they're going to need money now or 3 or 4 years from now, and how much they're going to need. And what is going to be their spending threshold if they retire? We know the first 2 years are going to spend more money. Everybody always seems to do that.
Is there a certain amount that people should set aside for the first 2 years?
I think so. I think if they, you know, whatever they tell me, if they say, okay, I need $150,000 a year, I need 100, and I've got some that just need $60,000 a year. They have smaller homes. They live in smaller towns. Yeah. So $60,000 a year will take care of them. And then I've got some that 90 or 100 is absolutely what they've got to have. Then I have one client that keeps $200,000 in cash at all times for any emergency they might have, or if he wants to go buy something. And sometimes he does.
And he just pays cash.
Yep, he pays cash. And, you know, some of these guys say, well, now in 3 years I'll need a new pickup, or 4 years. Or, you know, we're planning on a round-the-world cruise. So you have to find out what kind of money they're going to need, how often they're going to need, and when they're going to need it.
So essentially you're talking about people being on a glorified budget is what you're talking about, right?
Right. And everybody needs a budget. I don't care who you are. If you've got $5 million, you need to say, okay, I want to spend this much every year, and I want a cushion in it, but I don't want to spend over that.
Do people kind of lose touch with their spending habits, especially in the first 2 years? You know, because when you go to work and you're, you know, fully, you know, involved in your life, and you're constantly looking at these numbers, and you know what's in the bank, you know what your paycheck is, you know where everything is and all that. But then when you go to retire and you're not doing that quite as much, you may just kind of like, you know, haphazardly travel or just kind of loosely, well, I'll just get this and I'll just get that. Do people tend to lose sense of where they are budget-wise the first 2 years of retirement?
Well, the first year they sometimes do, because they're thinking about all this, and they're just, you know, I want to go here, I want to go there, I want to buy a new boat, I want to buy this. And sometimes they let it get out of control. And then I've got some that are very conservative, and they say, okay, we're going to buy another house and sell this house, but we want it to be on a lake, we want to be on a golf course. And, you know, that's solid. They can do that all day long. But then I've got some that say, all right, if I have been retired a couple of years, I think I'll buy a ranch.
Mm.
And they do. So that takes a lot of money to go out here and buy a ranch. And then I've got two or three that bought little small farms just to have fun. You know? Yeah, I mean, like a 145-acre farm.
Oh, my goodness.
That's small. They can manage it. Have fun with it, and it's not going to cost a lot to manage it.
Yeah, yeah. It's more like a hobby, something to do, as opposed to like a business.
That's right.
So,
and all these things are to keep the men busy.
No, that's important, because if you don't have a job to get up and go to and people counting on you, you kind of go a little stir-crazy from what I hear.
That's exactly right. I have men that tell me, I've got to get out of the house. Mm. And I agree with them. You know, you don't want to be around under your wife's foot all day long. She's going to think of something to get you out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
She needs to. Nobody needs a husband around 24 hours a day. It's too much.
No, and if the husband will go quietly, everybody wins. If they go kicking and screaming, it's not going to be pleasant for anybody.
They should not resist, let me tell you that. Men never resist. Give in. Go do something else. And then a lot of them have a shop, mm-hmm. and they make things. They do a lot of woodworking, and that's good for them, too. And then I have the others that just play golf. They move down here to, you know, one of the beautiful lakes we've got far, far away from the desert, and they play golf 2 or 3 days a week. They have a boat. They go out on that, and they actually do something.
You know, as long as we're talking about behavior patterns of the newly retired, do you find that most people, do they plan ahead and say, okay, I want to do these things, therefore I need the money to do it? Or do they retire and say, okay, here's how much I've got, what can I do with it? Which approach do most people take?
Well, most people will tell me in advance, this is how much we're going to get, this is what we want to do, you know, and they tell me all these things. And then there's the people that don't really plan. They just say, here's how much we've got. We're going to retire in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make us some money.
Okay.
A lot of people say that to me. Faye, just make us some money.
So they just don't care. They just here, put it in, invest
That's
it,
right.
And pay me.
Yeah, just invest it, make us some money. And we'll talk to you next year.
Okay. So then they figure out once they retire, they say, okay, we've got this chunk of money. We've got, say, I don't know, $1.5 million in the bank on retirement day. And they say, okay, Faye, what can we do with this? Is that generally how it works?
Well, they say, okay, let's get invested. And I've had some new clients. I invested part of their money, but I didn't do it all. And they actually called and said, aren't you going to get all that invested? And, of course, you know, sometimes we go slow on that. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't just pour it all in at one time. And, of course, right now, you know, we're looking at about $5 million in policies, different policies. We've got a whole bunch of policies that came in this week. We're looking at them to see which ones would be best for the clients. I turned one down. The lady's 82 years old.
Wow.
And the broker sends me another little note. Well, now, Faye, I know you turned it down due to their age, but look how good the LE is. I said, I don't want to look at how good the LE is.
Wow.
It's out. I don't want to hear about it. We're not ever doing anyone 82 years old.
You generally go up to what, 72-ish?
74, 75, right there, and we stop.
Mm.
That's the cutoff date.
And the reason is because
they are not going to die anytime soon.
They're healthy and kicking, and usually if you're 75 or 72 or 4, whatever, you're out active and you're doing things and you're either traveling or you're functional and basically having a great life.
That's right. Somebody 80 and 90 are still living at home. They're not going to die anytime soon. They don't have anything even wrong with them. But you take someone 70, lots of times if a 70-year-old gets cancer, it's hard for them to make a comeback. It's hard for them to survive that cancer. Doesn't matter whether it's second degree or fourth degree, it's hard for them to survive. We've done several, and they came in on time.
Mm.
And we had one come in this week, the Roberts case, a little $250,000 one. That was a good little case. Four people are in it. And you know, lots of times, we'll do a small one like that, and then we'll do a big one, but it all works out the same.
Hmm.
You know, whatever type of cancer it is, it depends on how bad a shape they're in when they got it and what treatment they're going to put on them.
Do you recommend people either getting these small policies or large policies? Which way do you generally favor?
We buy a lot of large policies and put a lot of people in one policy. If we get a lot of little ones in, we do those in a hurry. But the big ones, it seems like you've got a lot of profit in those.
Mm.
So that's what we're usually doing. You know, it's the bigger policies. We do a lot of $1 million policies, a lot of $2 million policies. And then we turned down a $500,000 this week. It was a good policy. I didn't want to turn it down, but it was with First Colony Life. Well, I wasn't familiar with them, and I'm familiar with most life insurance carriers. We looked it up. Genworth owns it. Genworth is a B-rated company.
Oh.
So even though this was a great policy, we turned it down because Genworth is a B-rated company, and they've been downgraded. I know they're trying to make a comeback, but I don't think they have yet.
Was somebody just trying to slip one in, or is it like an actual thing that, you know, a real policy?
I don't think they thought about us looking it up.
Mm.
But since we weren't familiar with it, we knew that somebody had to own it. It wasn't an outright life insurance company. And sure enough, they had sold it to Genworth 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh.
So it's under the Genworth umbrella.
Mm-hmm. And so that's, I guess, part of the advantage of having things set up the way you do. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but what I picture is, you know, you've got the offices and you've got actual people who actually talk to actual clients, as opposed to, excuse me, like you've got these major, huge sky rises, and you've got just, you know, people who are just numbers, and you may call and get a random customer service agent. You've got actual people who talk to people, and you know them on a first name basis, right?
Not only do we know them, our providers will tell us, you know, that they've actually talked to the person that has cancer. They'll tell me how many times they've been in the hospital, if they're in the hospital right now, and what the prognosis is from their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
because lots of times we'll buy a policy and they'll say, oh gosh, that person's back in the hospital pay. So they'll tell me about it. So it gives us a heads up.
So when you're looking at policies and you're deciding what to bid on, because I know that there are so many different policies out there. There's so many different types of policies. There's so many different companies. There's so many different reasons for selling them. When you're looking at policies to buy, or even we'll take it back one step further. When you're looking at policies to even consider bidding on, what kinds of things are you looking for? Because I know you're looking for only stage 4 cancer. What are some of the big highlights that make a good policy?
Well, the first thing is, how advanced is it really? How far has it spread? If it's in the bones, if it's in the skeleton, if it's in the liver, where all it's gone? And they always check when it has metastasized in several places. They always check to see if it's went to the brain, because that's usually the last place it will go. And if it's metastasized in, like in the liver, in the skeleton, in the lungs, you know that they're really sick. Yeah. And if it hadn't moved any, they've got a long way to go. And it's just, they're not as sick as what we're looking for. We're looking for someone that, the policy's not over 30 months, and that it might be, 24, 28 months, or even shorter. Some of the ones I bid on this week were 16 months, and 24 months, and to me, those are good policies, especially when they've been fighting it for 2 years already.
Oh, wow! So it's advanced then.
That's right. It started out in one place, and it's already went to these other places. So the people are pretty sick. So they do not have a long life assessment, and they're saying, this person is not going to live very long. And I agreed with it. So, as I said, we bid $1 million policy with one company, $2 million with another, and we don't know if we got those, but we bid, about $3 million this week. And it takes a lot of policies because we have a lot of money and a lot of clients wanting to keep their investments going all the time.
How many policies do you try to, and there may not even be a number. I don't know. I've never asked you this, so I don't think we've ever talked about this. If this question makes no sense, correct me and stop me. But
just tell you it makes no sense, right?
Do you have a certain number of policies that you try to have on hand at all time? And again, I don't even know if that's a thing. It may not be.
No, it doesn't work exactly that way. We're trying to keep their money invested at all times. So it takes a lot of policies because, we've got five that are coming in right now to the bank that will be in the next 2 weeks. We've got five policies that will be in. So those people are going to want their money reinvested. The last batch I did, I told the people on Sullivan and a couple others, your money is not there, but I've already got you a policy lined up. So we did it in advance. And so we told them what about it. They agreed to it. So when everything came in, we slipped it in those policies, and we were through. We had it all done for them.
Okay. And once people are in a policy, you really don't have to do anything until the policy matures. And once that happens, you receive notice and go through the whole process. And within a few weeks, people get paid, right?
That's exactly right. As you know, when we have a maturity, it takes 6 or 8 weeks to get those paid. We're doing it a little quicker now that we've got that new shortcut, going direct to the courthouse ourselves. In the town they live in, rather than going to the state. The state, as you know, was taking too long. And so now we're going to the city and the courthouse in where they actually live, and that helps a lot.
Yeah, I bet that expedites the process quite a bit. Do you ever have to go find policies, or do they all come to you? Like if somebody was to come to you and say, Faye, I've got $750,000, I want to put it in a policy or two or five or whatever it is, go ahead and invest. Do you say, oh my God, well, we don't have anything for that right now, let me go find something? Or how does that work?
No, we always say, okay, I've got this policy and this policy, and put you in right now. The others may take 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay. So it just depends on what's available at the time, and it may happen in stages.
That's exactly right. Sometimes it does, because when we buy like a $2 million policy, we've got to fund all of that before we go on to another one. So each one, we fund that, then go on to the next one.
Is there any such thing as having too many policies on hand?
I don't think so. I've never had that problem. I've never had to have too many, I'll tell you, because we always have a lot of people that want to get in policies. So, no, that's not a problem.
So how does the process work when you go to fill one? So say you bid on a policy, you get it, say, on a Monday. How does it work? How do you get people in it? What's the time frame?
Okay, what we do, we're probably going to spend 2 days filling it if it's $1 million. And we look at who is available, who we think would be good in that particular policy. Does it fit their needs? If it does, we email them and say, we think this is a great policy for you. Read the health information and get back to us. We want this by Thursday.
Oh, wow. That's fast.
It is. But all they have to do is read it and study it and make a decision. And then we have people that are always late getting back to us, always late. And lots of times we just have to go on. One of our good clients called this week. He said, "Now, I got in that policy. Now, why didn't my brother get in it? What happened?" We said, "Your brother didn't call us back. He was in Colorado." And, you know, this happens. I mean, a lot of these families, they all know who put money in with us, how much. And if they didn't get in, well, they're, you know, they want to know why brother didn't get in.
So what happens if brother doesn't get in? Is he just out?
He's out. He's out. He has to wait for another policy.
Okay, so it will, the rotation does circle back around.
It does. But, like, if you turn a policy down, then I'm going to go on to everybody else and not going to come back to you for a while.
It sounds like a fast-moving process. How long, generally, do people have?
2 or 3 days at the most, because we want to get it funded. We want to get the owner paid and get it done. So, and they're asking us, what day will you have the money to us? And I'll say 3 days, you know, or 2 days, whatever it is.
Okay. So when they're selling it, they need to fill it quickly. You need to fill it quickly to get investors, you know, into it so that they can start, you know, the process, get that money growing. So that's why it's a fast moving process. It's really happening on many, many different levels at the same time.
That's right. And what is so interesting, lots of times we have people that want to put more money in. We'll say, "Well, we're thinking $90,000." I say, no, I want to put $140,000. I want to put $150,000. And so, and we try to accommodate them. Lots of people will love a particular policy. They'll say, "No, I'm all in. I want to put more money in." And then we have a certain amount of people that invest all the time. Every time, they're always yes. So we always want to have policies ready for them because they are our tried and true. I mean, they invest all the time. That's why they make so much money. We have found in the last year that people who invest all the time, their numbers come up more often, comes up a lot more often than the people who invest once a year or once 2 years or once every 6 months.
Is there a limit for investment in a particular policy? Now, I know policies, you know, the dollar amounts are different. You know, they're all different. I know that, but maybe a percentage. Maybe that's a better way to ask it. Is there if somebody wanted to put in, like you just said, more money? Is there a point where it gets too much, too top heavy, maybe, and you got to say no?
Yeah, sometimes we say no. We don't think it's a good idea. We don't think we should have but $90,000 a person in there.
And what would the threshold for that be? Why would that be?
Well, sometimes it's a premium, and sometimes it's just a fact that I think that everybody, you know, it's a big policy. We need to get a lot of people in it. So I'm cutting it down where more people can get in it.
Okay. So say
yeah, because they're going to want to put so much money in, it's going to a lot of people might not could get in it if I have too many large investments in it.
Okay, so if you say you had a, and I'm just making up a wild example here. I don't even know if this is realistic or not. But say you had a $1 million policy, and somebody comes along and says, "Faye, I want to be the only person in this policy. I want that big bang." And you, I assume, would say, "No, we need to spread this out. So instead of all in on this one, maybe take whatever's left over, put it in another policy or two or three, kind of diversify."
That's right. We would want them to be diversified. The only times we let them go all of it by themselves if it's a small policy. If it's like up to $250,000, we'll let one person do it. But usually we like to have several people in every policy where it's diversified.
Okay. So this
now, if it's 100,000, that's not a problem. I let people do that all the time. But if it's 250,000 or above, I prefer to have more than one person in that policy.
And this keeps, I guess this keeps the ball rolling because people are not all in one policy and they shouldn't ever really, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like they shouldn't ever really plan to come in and say, I'm going to get in that one big policy and then I'm going to retire. That's not how this works.
No, that, it isn't going to work that way. When they bring money to us, we want to diversify them where we've got policies coming in all the time, maturing. We want them to be happy. And we want them to retire early, but we want them to retire with a lot of money.
Okay.
And it takes time to accumulate a lot of money. You're not going to do it overnight.
All right. So generally speaking,
you've got to stay with it once you start.
Somebody, say, has $500,000. They want to put, say, $500,000 in one policy. You're going to say, no, it's better to put $100,000 in five policies and spread it out that way. How does that affect, like, maturity and payouts and things like that? Does that keep things always kind of turning over?
Yes, I think it does. And I'd rather have somebody in five policies than one in a $500,000. I don't think that's a good idea. But if you've got five policies, you're going to have five maturities.
Yeah. Okay. So they're always kind of like leapfrogging a little bit. You know, a policy will pay out. Say a $100,000 policy will pay out. You take that profit, you put it in another one. Meanwhile, at some point, another one of those five policies will mature. You take that, put it in another one. It seems like it kind of keeps things moving instead of just sitting and waiting for the egg to hatch, so to speak.
That's right. We don't want to sit here and wait on one big policy.
Okay.
You know, I just don't think that's a good idea.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
And your website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. People can go there, find a wealth of information about wealth management, wealth growing, and things like that. And every Saturday morning around this time, we always get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
It's about Rice University.
Ooh.
Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Rice University. It's one of the most prestigious universities in the world, really. It's one of the prettiest. Everybody should go there just to see how pretty Rice University is. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Really?
The story of Rice University is there was a gentleman. He was 84 years old, lived in Massachusetts. And his name was William Marsh Rice. He made all of his money in Texas. He had cotton farms. He was in railroads. He was in real estate. And he had put in his will that when he died, everything was to be sent to Texas, namely Houston. Houston was just a spot on the railroad by that time. He wanted to start a university.
Huh.
And he had planned for it, and it was already in his will. Well, an unusual thing. On the morning of September 23rd, 1900, he was found dead.
What?
By his valet, Charles F. Jones. They pronounced him dead.
What?
Everything thought, oh, well, he died in his sleep.
Huh.
Shortly thereafter, a suspicious check, large check, made out to his New York lawyer, signed by Mr. Rice, was noticed by a bank. Teller said, you know, his name is misspelled on this check.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. The lawyer's name was Albert T. Patrick. And so then he announces to the world that Mr. Rice has changed his will and that he left all of his fortune to him. Subsequent investigation led by the district attorney of New York resulted in Mr. Patrick's arrest.
Uh-oh.
And then of the butler, and then the valet.
Oh, my.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. They had conspired to murder Mr. Rice.
Wow. It sounds like a classic game of Clue.
It was. And they did it by chloroform.
Really?
Yeah. They chloroformed him while he was asleep.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, his personal lawyer in Houston was Captain James Baker. And now he aided in the discovery about this fake will with the forged signature. They did not prosecute him because he cooperated with the district attorney. And he testified against Patrick and all these other people. Well, in 1912, they let this guy back out of prison due to medical testimony. Back then, it was kind of screwy, you know?
Yeah.
But Mr. Baker helped Rice's estate direct the fortune, which it was $4.6 million in 1904. And that would be $131 million today.
Wow.
Yes. And they were going to start the Rice Institute. Of course, later they did get the name right and get it to Rice University. In 1907, the Board of Trustees selected the head of the Department of Mathematics and Astronomy at Princeton University. His name was Edgar Odell Lovett. And they said, would you come to Texas and head this new university? Well, of course, he wanted to do it. Now, he went to 73 universities all around the world to see what they had, what the architecture looked like, and he did all this research in 1908 and 1909. And he was so impressed by all this architecture that he wanted Rice to have all these beautiful columns and all the different things from around the world. So he got all that done, and then they started the university, started building. And he called for the establishment of a university of the highest grade. Now, to start with, it was just going to be boys there. And then he went farther and said, oh, no, it had to be white boys. Mm-hmm. Because this was in 1904, 1905.
Yeah, very different times.
A very different time. And they wanted the most distinguished teachers in their undergraduate teaching. And then in 1911, they put the cornerstone for the first building. And they called it Lovett Hall in honor of the president. In 1912, the 12th anniversary of his murder, the science and art began their coursework. They had 59 kids.
59?
59. And they had a dozen faculty.
All right.
And then about 18 additional students joined. The initial class numbered 77. There was 48 males, 29 girls, and they accepted co-educational almost from the beginning, but there was no housing for women. Hmm. And so then, according to his will, half of these kids, I hate to tell you, failed. It was so hard in 1912, they couldn't even pass.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So the first commencement was June 12, 1916. They awarded 35 bachelor's degree and one master's degree. Then they voted to adopt the honor system. They still use it today. What they would let you do, you get your test, you go home and study for the test, and you come back and give them your answers.
Wait a minute. You took the test with you?
You could take the test home on the honor system. They trusted every student.
Wow. That won't fly today, that's for sure.
Hey, they still use that at Rice University.
Do they really?
At Rice University, they can still do a lot of things. And then when they did build the girls' dormitories, this is hilarious. They built it at one end of the big university away from the boys. And then they would not allow any benches. They did not want them to sit down and be talking, flirting, or getting to know them.
Really?
They said, yeah, we got to keep the boys and girls separated. And so then in 1959, the Rice Institute computer went online. And in 1960, they renamed the William Marsh Rice University to just Rice University. Now then, they had all this land. And then Humble Oil and Refining Company and NASA, they were wanting to start the Johnson Space Center. So they helped with Humble Oil and NASA getting together and doing all this. And to this day, they're very heavily involved in the space program.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yes. And the relationship of NASA with Rice University and the city has remained strong all these years.
Huh.
And then, of course, the original charter said, admit, educate, and tuition free. Well, that didn't last long.
Yeah.
the university filed a lawsuit to allow the university to modify the charter to admit students any race and to charge them tuition. And today, the tuition is over $50,000 a student.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very expensive place, and you have to be very smart. Now then, what a lot of people don't know, they have an endowment of over $1 billion.
Really?
Can you imagine?
No, I can't.
That kind of a university.
Wow.
And, of course, as I said, they didn't even allow benches. It became coeducational between 73 and 1987, that, you know, you could, the girls could actually study there. And it was a long time before, you know, they allowed them to be housed there. You had to be off campus. And they pride itself on the amount of green space on campus. There's only 50 buildings spread between the main entrance and then the parking lots of Rice Stadium at the west, and the Lynn Lowry Arboretum, consisting of more than 4,000 trees and shrubs.
Wow. That sounds beautiful. I've never even seen pictures. I've never been there before.
You need to look at it. And Rice swears they have a tree for every student.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Because you know how I love architecture. And when you know, say that he went around to all these different schools all over the place to study their architecture and see what they have and all that, you know, just so he could make it, you know, what it is, that just sounds fascinating. That's an awful lot of attention to detail. You know, there's something about, like, a university, a prestigious university, that there's just something about it that's just, it's very, I guess, honorable, maybe? I don't know what the right word is, but it's almost intimidating. But to see architecture like this in these situations is absolutely beautiful.
And it is one of the prettiest universities in the world. And their football stadium and facility, Rice Stadium, it opened in 1950 with 70,000 seats.
Wow!
And now it'll hold about, you know, they reconfigured it to 47,000 for football. But 70,000, the total number of Rice alumni living and deceased. It was the site of the Super Bowl years ago, and John F. Kennedy gave a speech there in 1962. And he challenged the nation to send a man to the moon.
Is that where that speech was given?
Uh-huh.
That's a very famous speech. I didn't know that was at Rice University.
And there's so many famous people. We've had a lot of astronauts graduate. The president of some of your biggest corporations in America graduated from Rice University.
Wow.
And it is a nonprofit.
Really?
It's a nonprofit school because of the tremendous endowments that they have. I don't know of any school that's got $1 billion in funding.
That's insane. I mean, it's unheard of.
It's unheard of to have $1 billion.
Wow.
And Lovett Hall, which is the first building there, is the most magnificent building you've ever seen.
Have you've seen it in person or pictures?
I have.
Wow.
And they have 40 undergraduate degree programs. They have 51 master's programs. And they have 19 doctor programs.
And you say a lot of astronauts have...
Oh, yeah. A lot of astronauts have graduated from Rice University.
And I guess that makes sense, you know, with their relationship with NASA and all that in Houston. So.
Yes, and you have to be very smart to go to Rice.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. They only about 16% that apply or even get in.
16, like 1/6?
Yeah, that's right. Only 16% get in.
Wow.
You have to be a brain to get in.
Clearly, yeah.
Yeah, and as I said, it's one of the most beautiful colleges in the whole world.
Well, that might have to go on a bucket list of places to tour. It sounds like not only is the architecture and the buildings stunning, but it sounds like the landscape and you know, the trees and the grounds themselves, it sounds like that also is just as big as an attraction as the buildings.
That's right. And as I said, we've had all these astronauts. We've had the president of Texaco, all these people graduate from there, and they have all given tremendous amounts. All these men that made their fortunes after they graduated have given millions back.
Wow, that's fantastic. You know, it's nice to see, because a lot of people will just, you know, go to school, they'll go on their business and never look back. But for people to be so moved by an experience and by a place like Rice University, for them to go ahead and give so much money back, it speaks volumes to how much they were impacted by the school.
That's right. And you have to have a high grade point. And as I said, only 16% even get in.
That's amazing.
But they have so many different colleges there under that one roof. It's just amazing.
That is. That's definitely going on the list of things to go see probably this spring to, you know, drive around and tour. I'd love to see
that. And
you'll
want to take lots of pictures of the university. You'll
I'm
be so
sure.
impressed.
Wow. It sounds just absolutely stunning.
And a lot of people want to get in, but they don't.
Yeah. No doubt.
So wow. It's one in a million as far as architecture in the United States.
Amazing. Rice University, definitely on the list of things to see. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, you only invest or you only bid on life insurance policies for people who are diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Why is that? What's the benefit to the investor?
The benefit is it's going to come sooner. It's going to mature a lot sooner. You know, we've done 2 or 3 heart deals 4 or 5 years ago. They did manage to come due. But, you know, as I said, we wanted things that we know the people are sick and that it will have a maturity. Mm-hmm. So that's what we really work on. We have older policies, and we've learned from those older policies that, you know, old people are wonderful, and we love them, but they're not sick. These people are sick, so we're going to have a shorter amount of time, and we're going to make more money.
So just to kind of get a larger picture of the entire landscape of the opportunity, why would – because we see commercials on TV all the time about people, you know, selling their life insurance policy and they're traveling and doing all this. Why would anybody invest in a policy of somebody like that, maybe 65, 70, who just wants to travel and they're healthy? Why would anybody invest in something like that? What's the advantage?
I don't know. I haven't got it figured out. I just can't figure it out. Because they advertise, they'll buy your policy if there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
Why would you do it? That person might live 60 years, or I'm being ridiculous, but they certainly might live 30 or 40.
Well, you know, we're listening to what you're saying here, and you're talking about policies that are, you know, 18, 24 months, and what that means is that people invest in these policies. Doctors think that they're probably going to mature in 18 to 24 months, and it's hard to see any kind of advantage of investing in any life insurance policy that doesn't fit that parameter. So, and you've been doing it for so many years, it sounds like it's absolutely working in everybody's favor. It's a win-win.
It does work, and I don't understand why. I don't know how much they're going to pay them if they're absolutely not sick, because you're not going to have any cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance company or whoever buys it, if it's a Wall Street company, let's say, they've got to have a lot of cash, because they're not going to have any cash for years off those policies.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing wrong with them.
Yeah.
And we know that the people, our customers, are going to have cash flow. That's why they do this, for cash flow, for interest. And you won't have that if you buy it from somebody that's not sick.
So we're looking at really good percentage of return on their investment. So the actual dollar amount of return is great, and they're fairly quick, which means that people can turn around, reinvest that in other policies and make more money.
That's right? Exactly right. That's the way it works.
Okay.
And there's some going to go over, and you have to be patient if they go over. If they go over a year or 2 years, you're still going to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
It just went over. Then you're going to have the ones that come in early. It should balance out. You'll have a certain percent are going to be early. You're going to have a certain percent on time. Then you're going to have a certain percent that'll go over. So you have to be prepared for all three.
And if it does go over,
when they come in early, people are never prepared. They'll go, "Oh, I didn't know it was going to come in early."
Happy surprise.
Yes, it is. They're all surprised and great.
But when it comes in late, people do need to be aware that if that happens, they need to pay those premiums. And you always say that that's the biggest risk in this type of investment, is if it does go over.
That's right. And to know that you're going to have to pay it, you know, you have to be prepared. And if you are, it's not a big deal. It's just going to go like clockwork. And then when it matures, you still get your money. You still get your interest. You still get your principal back.
What are the other two risks?
The other risk is it's not liquid during that time. So that's why they should be accredited with us. If you're an accredited investor, it's not going to bother you if it goes over. If you're not accredited, it's going to bother you. So, you know, we're trying to do just accredited investors.
So what is
because
it mean?
We know if you're accredited, you're making $200,000 a year or you're worth $1 million without your home.
All right. So there's enough resources in other places that people aren't, like, spending their last $50.
That's exactly right. We don't want them spending their last money on premium. That's why we're saying you need to be accredited to do business with us.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a win-win situation. How are you on policies almost being available for people to invest in?
We do have policies that will be available this week in the coming weeks because I think we got some of these bids on this $1 million, the other million, and the two.
So a lot of
big opportunities. So we'll be ready to do those.
Great, great. One last time, Faye, what is your phone number for people to call you and make an appointment and start growing their money?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.